excited to have Stephanie willing to come up here. She's got three young kids herself, almost four and six. And, you know, one thing that is so gracious, God is so gracious with us with parenting is that, you know, we make tons of mistakes, and yet we can always be learning from these things. It's a process that God is committed to helping us, and that we don't have to beat ourselves up for the mistakes that we made, but that we can continue to learn. And even, you know, for me, I've been a parent. My oldest is 22 years old, just graduated from college. But still, there's things that I feel like these talks are such great reminders of things that I need to do, and that I can really, you know, apologize for the mistakes that I've made and try to make start new practices. And this is something that God is committed to helping us with. And he's also given us a community to help us with, and so that we can get support from one another. So hopefully that this is something that you can be able to take away from these meetings. And then Stephanie's going to come up and share specifically about how to parent during the challenging years. So Stephanie, come on up.
Sweet. It is. I'm Stephanie Lehnert. I am teaching on serving during the challenging years. I got asked to teach this parenting meeting, and I'm sitting there holding my third child, who's 9 months old at the time, and I'm thinking, I am still in the thick of all of it. Like, how is that even possible? What would I even have to offer? But then I remembered one thing, is you get to put your kid's picture up on the screen. And I was like, sign me up. Oh my gosh, they're so cute. Like, it hurts my soul to look at them. Like, they are so adorable. You know how I feel, because that's how you feel about your kids. Like, this is such an awesome gift. It's such a privilege. It's super exciting. Also, there were things that people have said in a parenting meeting or meeting like this over the last six or so years that I was sitting under teachings, and people have said things that have changed the way I parent daily, that I, like, nuggets that I remember, and I'm so grateful for them, and I'm grateful that God used it in that way. So that was kind of my motivation, was like, if there's something that can be said today that changes maybe the way you think on a daily basis, then God is good, and he's going to use it. So hopefully that's the case. Now, the challenging years, how do we define that? I'm sure there's questions over this. How is this defined? I'm going to define it as parenting young children, because that's all I know. So that's my definition for today, my working definition. It's crazy. It's a lot of life transition. You go from one to two. You go from zero to one, one to two, two to three. Sorry, honey. We had to. You know, it's crazy. And it's a unique time in life. And so some of you might be here and you're like, we have older kids. I'm out of this stage. I wouldn't define it. And for you, I'm like, well, you got free breakfast, so don't complain. And two, like, what we're going to talk about today is always hard. Like, thinking less about yourself and more about other people doesn't get easier as we get older or have older kids at every stage in life. This is challenging, so I'm sure there's something for you. And then there's still some of you who are like, I have older kids, and I will tell you this. I'm laughing at you. Like, you'd think this is hard. Just wait. And to you, I would say example A, going out to eat, okay? I'm sorry, but we used to go out to eat for fun, not as a form of torture, right? This is a hard stage. This is crazy. It is impossible to get out of the house, right? You're like, who am I? I thought I was like this really patient person. And I was like, I faked it with one kid, with two. I was like, I am not patient. There's nothing in me that is naturally patient. Or, oh my God, the grocery store, right? I like handled grocery shopping okay. One kid, two kid, cool. Three kids? Whoa. You wanna, I'm not who I thought I was. I will put it that way, right? Don't be the crotchety old man in Costco, because Mama Bear will come after you, is what I learned, right? The old man is like mad that my baby is crying in the grocery store. So what do you do? What do you do in that moment? Calm, cool, collected, conflict avoider, Stephanie, would normally just be like, huh, right? You know? But instead, I'm like sitting there debating, do I really need 10 pounds of rice? I need rice for dinner tonight, but do I need 10 pounds? I don't know. Decisions take a long time for me. And the old man is like, quiet him down already. And I'm like, excuse me, are you publicly shaming me for my kid crying in Costco? And he's like, my kid's never acted that way. To which then I lost it. Oh, really? Oh, I'm sorry, your kids had to be raised by such a poop head, except I didn't say poop head. And to which I then followed it up with a Bible verse, of course. To the degree that you judge another, you only condemn yourself. I grab my 10-pound bag of rice, I throw it over my shoulder, and I end with, girls, can you repeat after me, poop head, except I didn't say poop head. So I think other moms probably would have been like, had my back, right? Until I'm like encouraging my kids to cuss at old men, and it's a low moment. It is a low, and I am like not that person. Like who have I become? How crazy is this stage that it would change me in such a way or reveal the reality of who I am? Making dinner, not fun. It is not fun during this stage. This is crazy. Don't put Bumbos on counters, even if it is holding your turkey. And oh my God, the fog of sleeplessness. This is a form of torture. It is like, what happened to thoughts? Like, you used to have them and they were fun to have, but they disappeared. And the fog doesn't lift even when you get sleep. Like, it's just still there. It's really a challenging time in life. It's a lot of major life change, a lot of personal sacrifice, and a lot of coffee. You know, it's not a parenting meeting without talking about moms and their coffee. But my sister-in-law has the best story about coffee. She's not a coffee drinker most of her life. She's like, this is what she says. Marine for 10 years, 4 deployments, got shot at, got blown up. Not a coffee drinker. 1 year with a toddler, coffee. It's like, it is hard. It's crazy. And now we're going to introduce, like, okay, so make sure that we have, like, capability to love other people and that we're thinking about other people during this time and that we're giving out and we're serving. Huge question mark. What does that even look like when, like, your day-to-day is really complicated? Or that sitting on the couch, like, I have nothing left. I'm done. So I'm not using a creative like term when I say serving. I'm just using a definition of performing duties or services for another person or an organization, doing something for someone else. It's not crazy or profound. It's a human virtue. It's like no one's going to critique you when you put your Kindness Matters post up on Instagram. Going to be like, you're so nice. Like, ooh. They're not judging you for that. It's like, we all value this. Like, we are, like, behind this. This is, you should be kind. We teach our children this. You don't have to love Jesus to be into this. It's a human virtue, community service. Better to give than receive is culturally acceptable. And we even have experienced that. Like, we teach that, and we know, like, yeah, it is better to give than receive on some base level. Some of you are reading this last line here, taking care of you makes me happy too. The other half of you are singing it, because that's a Daniel Tiger song, and I am not going to sing it. For some of us, the definition of serving expands beyond that. You know, there was a time in your life when God entered into it in a real and profound way. You got forgiven by him. And it kind of changed everything. It was like this peace that you didn't know was possible, this closeness with him. You were filled with his love, and you felt like you had more than you needed, and you wanted it to overflow. And you had this desire to, like, want to give love away. And maybe you even experienced it, too, that it was like, oh my God, I didn't even want to do this thing, but I felt like God was like wanting me to, and then I did it, and I liked it, and it was scary, and it was hard, and I didn't want to, but then I got like so filled up afterwards, and like, man, it like really impacted someone, and I just didn't know God wanted to use me for stuff like that, and it was really cool, and it feels really good, and it was really filling. I was talking to my hairdresser, telling her I was teaching a parenting class, and she's like, oh, what are you teaching on? And I was like, you know, like how to have creative ways to give love while going through major life change and a lot of personal sacrifice. And she was like, that's a thing? And I was like, yeah, it's a thing. You know, it's not a profound, like, thing. It's not rocket science. But it, like, is daily hard. Like, it's not intuitive. It's not what our feelings lead us towards. It's not the natural path of least resistance. It's, like, takes energy and will and might and, like, mental capacity. It's a persuaded, deliberate choice that we're like, I believe this is good, and I'm gonna commit to having this be an aspect of my life where I find ways to give love. The author of Hebrews is concerned about their audience. Concerned that, like, okay, you had this period in life where you were growing with God and loving and serving, but concerned that they were maybe shying back, not maturing in their relationship with God. And in Hebrews 6, 9 through 12, he says this, "Dear friends, even though we're talking this way, we really don't believe it applies to you. We are confident that you are meant for better things, things that come with salvation. For God is not unjust, and he will not forget how hard you have worked for him and how you have shown your love to him by caring for other believers, as you still do." Yeah, he says, with salvation comes this desire to want to love other people. And it's like, God knows that you have been into that and you have been doing that. He says, our great desire is that you will keep on loving others as long as life lasts, in order to make certain that what you hope for will come true. Then you will not become spiritually dull and indifferent. Instead, you will follow the example of those who are going to inherit God's promises because of their faith and their endurance. Yeah, isn't this it right here? Our great desire is that you would keep on loving others as long as life lasts. Isn't this the goal? We don't want to, like, hit this crazy time with little kids and then kind of get derailed. And then what is the impact that going to have on our children and on our life? God says this is a protection. He's like, then you will not become spiritually dull and indifferent. If we give up on this just because things are really crazy or hard, there's going to be kind of long-term consequences. This stage provides any excuse you're looking for. If you need an excuse not to do something, don't worry, because your child just woke up, and they're going to provide it. It's like, I'm sorry, my kid just, so I just can't. Of course, I have to qualify, because that's the reality. Sometimes it's like, my kid just puked, I'm not coming to playgroup. You know, like, yeah, that's not an excuse for loving yourself more and others less. It's like, it's just reality. We got to be flexible. I'm talking about, like, this mental battle going on in the mind every day that's like, I just can't. Like, I can't. I don't want to. Like, I just don't. This is what I committed to. It's what I said I would do. I would hang out. I don't want to. I don't feel like it. Nothing in me can give out right now. I'm too tired. I'm so uncomfortable. I'm over it. This is not what I signed up for. This is just really natural for all of us to kind of have this train of thought going on in our head. For me, this is my all the time. I am an expert comfort seeker. You know, it's like, what can I do and manipulate in my day to get to the comfortable part? You know, like, how fast can I get there? I feel like going into parenthood, I was really concerned watching other people struggle with their relationship with God during this stage. And it gave me a lot of concern. Like, if it's hard for them, what about me? Like, I am lazy, naturally, and undisciplined, and I don't love God, you know? Like, I'm just like, meh, about a lot of stuff. So I was really, I know people in my life had high concern. Like, wow, you're going to move into parenthood and move away from God. It says, keep on loving others as long as life lasts, then you will not become spiritually dull and indifferent. Yeah, this direction of like, if we're not pursuing loving people, then we head in the opposite direction. And the opposite direction is not where we're trying to go, but we might end up there without trying. It's like it leads away from God. It leads away from the fulfillment, like the ways that we're trying to get filled. And it leads us away from kind of the way our life was supposed to turn out, you know? We're like, wait, how did I even get to, like, things were not supposed to end up this way. The difficulties of this stage are actually supposed to push us to God and be like, okay, I realize I got nothing. Like, before I thought I could do it, now I realize, oh my God, I need you so much. I cannot do this alone. So the idea of service in our culture is totally culturally acceptable. So is the opposite, though, right? Like, girl, you got to take care of yourself. You cannot pour from an empty cup, right? Yeah, well, you also can't pour from a cup that doesn't have a bottom, like where you're just constantly pouring into yourself. When are you going to get to the place where you do care about other people, you know, or hashtag self-love. You got to get your adult coloring in and go out in the wilderness, get really fit, and read a book about loving you. And, you know, it's just like none of these things are wrong. It's like you got to do fun stuff, of course. But if this is what we're turning to, this self-care, this self-love, like I'm so exhausted. Like this, today I could literally feel my anxiety in my skin, you know, like my kids were driving me crazy or just the chaos or like the confusion of it all. And then I'm going to fix myself. I'm going to fill myself back up with some self-love and some self-care. Like, I did pick the cheesiest thing on hashtag self-care on Instagram. Change your home lock screen because that always makes me feel like a new person. Paint your nails, do your hair. You know, it's like, oh God, that was definitely by far the worst. There's probably some decent ideas on there. You know, the things aren't bad. Like, you got to have a Netflix night. Like, it's fun. The problem is it's just lame and ineffective to the filling that we might be desiring during this time. That, like, I matter more than, I'm more than changing diapers and feeding mouths. Like, I exist and I matter for bigger things. It's, these things just don't work. They're not wrong. They just don't work for what we're trying to get. Milton Vincent, in his book, A Gospel Primer, says this in his chapter called Mortifying the Flesh with Fullness. Says, on the most basic levels, I desire fullness, and fleshly lusts seduce me by attaching themselves to this basic desire. They exploit the empty spaces in me, and they promise that fullness will be mine if I give in to their demands. And when my soul sits empty and is aching for something to fill it, such deceptive promises are extremely difficult to resist. Yeah, isn't it? We go to these things to try and get full, and they attach to this basic need that we have, but then they don't actually fill us. He says in a different chapter on liberation from self-love, he says, compared to greater endeavors, self-love is mundane and tiresome. Consequently, the more thoroughly I can be done with such a tedium, the freer my soul will be to soar to its God-intended heights. Yeah, like, if you compare it to something great, it's kind of mundane and it's kind of tiresome. Like, a night on Netflix is really fun, but sometimes we're more tired than we are full afterwards. This article came out last month. That's really good. You're like, man, this is just in the New York Times. This guy is exploring. He's a cultural commentator. He's exploring our culture. And he came to some interesting conclusions that I like. He says, many of the people I admire lead lives that have a two-mountain shape. They got out of school, began their career, started a family, and identified the mountain they thought they were meant to climb. I'm going to be an entrepreneur, a doctor, a cop. They did the things society encourages us to do, like make a mark, become successful, buy a home, raise a family, pursue happiness. And these hustling years are also powerfully shaped by our individualistic and meritocratic culture. People operate under this assumption: I can make myself happy. If I achieve excellence, lose more weight, follow this self-improvement technique, fulfillment will follow, right? That we have this belief that what we can achieve for ourselves will bring about happiness. In the lives of the people I'm talking about, the ones I really admire, something happened that interrupted the linear existence they had imagined for themselves. Something happened that exposed the problem with living according to individualistic, meritocratic values. Some of them achieved success and found it unsatisfying. They figured there must be more to life, some higher purpose. Others failed. They lost their job, endured some scandal. Suddenly, they were falling, not climbing, and their whole identity was in peril. Yet another group of people got hit sideways by something that wasn't part of the original plan. They had a cancer scare or suffered the loss of a child. These tragedies made the first mountain victories seem, well, not so important. Life had thrown them into the valley, as it throws most of us into the valley at one point or another. They were suffering and adrift. Some people are broken by this kind of pain and grief. They seem to get smaller and more afraid and never recover. They get angry, resentful, tribal. Yeah, he's really describing that being in the valley or challenging circumstances, they change us. And they change us for one direction or the other. It says, but other people are broken open. The theologian Paul Tillich wrote that suffering upends the normal patterns of life, and he reminds you that you're not who you thought you were. The basement of your soul is much deeper than you knew. Some people look into the hidden depths of themselves, and they realize that success won't fill those spaces. Only a spiritual life and unconditional love from family and friends will do. Yeah, so what is the broken open path, the trip through the valley, the challenge, the hardship of this time? What is the path of great resistance? What are these greater endeavors that Milton Vincent talks about that are just so much better? And how can we allow this path through the valley to change us for the good and not for the worse? Matthew 11:28, Jesus gives us this. He says, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus makes this call. He's like, come to me. You don't have this on your own. Come to me when you feel overwhelmed, when this is too much, when the challenges are real, and I will give you rest. You know, this points to our need for soul rest, that getting right with God so we don't have that tension with him and we can just easily walk into his presence. Or it points to our reminding us that we need to connect with the God who gave us soul rest, that he loved us so much, he forgave us, he made himself so accessible. This is a yoke, okay? Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, okay? These are two ox. It's like you want to get the strength of these two animals to accomplish the work. And it's like, how do we keep them in step with one another? How do we partner them up so that the job is efficiently done? And God is saying, I want to partner up with you. Like, let me help carry the weight of this stage in life, of the hardship, of the complication. I feel like my husband has a look, and it's a look that says, you need to go partner up. Like, you're trying to do a lot on your own right now, and you're not a very nice person, and the kids can tell, and you need to go partner up. Like, You need to hang out with the Lord a little bit. You need to ask for some help. You're trying to accomplish so much on your own, and you're not doing that great of a job, you know? It's like, it's just one look, I can tell. I'm like, I know, you're right. Says, he has a yoke and he has a burden. The yoke is that we choose to connect with God, that we're going to partner up with him. And the burden is that God's like, okay, now that you've come to me, I care about something. I care about other people knowing and understanding my love in real and profound ways. And I want to use you to communicate that. And so it's like, we go to him, we connect, and then he's got a job for us. We're going to get the work done together. And we're gonna give out love. Because he supplies us with so much of it. Now, this is the path of great resistance because this is not the comfortable, easy, feelings-based path. This is the path that's like painful in the moment. Hebrews 12:11 says, no discipline is enjoyable while it's happening. It's painful. But afterward, there will be a peaceful harvest of right living for those who are trained in this way. Yeah. Trained. This is a training ground. During challenging circumstances, we get trained in a new way. It's like how this Greek word, I'm not saying it, but it's where you get the word gymnasium from. It means to exercise vigorously in a way, either body or in the mind. Yeah, so God is trying to exercise our mind to be able to trust him more. That do we trust what in God and what he says is going to fill us up, or do we trust in like what I can accomplish for myself is going to work? It's going to make me, it's going to give me that thing that I'm lacking, that I need. I'm needy during this time. This passage had a whole new light, I feel like, after having kids and the idea of trust in God. It's Luke 21:1-4. He says, while Jesus was in the temple, he watched the rich people dropping their gifts into the collection box. Then a poor widow came by, and she dropped in 2 small coins. I tell you the truth, Jesus said, this poor widow has given more than all the rest of them, for they have given a tiny part of their surplus. But she, poor as she is, has given everything she has. Yeah, why did she give everything she had to God? Because she trusted him. That was her position. That was her mental decision. And her trust was in God. I'd say before having kids, I'm like, you know what? I can serve God. I'm going to take 2 out of my 75 free hours this week. And I'm going to give it away. I'm like, I really trust and love God, you know. After having kids, I'm like, I got 4 minutes between chaos. Do I invest it in myself or do I give it away? Oh my God, I want to keep it. I want it for myself. And I have the perfect excuse. I deserve this. Like, do you see how much output I naturally have throughout my day? Look at what I'm giving to my children. You know, girl, gotta get filled up if she's gonna pour out of that cup. But really, it's this. It's my, where does my trust lie? Is what I'm gonna give to myself gonna be the thing that fills me up? Do I trust God? That his burden to love others through me is gonna be what works. It says, no discipline is enjoyable while it's happening, right? But what's the fruit? What happens? What gets accomplished through this training ground of doing something you don't feel like doing because you trust God and you believe him, you know? He says, afterward, there's a peaceful harvest of right living for those who are trained in this way. So what's the harvest? What comes from this kind of mental training of learning how to trust God in deeper ways as he puts something in front of you to give away? It's a character change. Says we can rejoice when we run into problems and trials, for we know that they help us develop endurance, and endurance develops strength of character, and character strengthens our confident hope of salvation. Yeah, so it's like as we go through difficult times and we trust God in the midst of it, it grows our trust in him, It strengthens our resolve on what he says to be true actually is true. You can live it out, and it makes sense. And it changes who we are. He says, I'm going to make you more like me, which is cool. It's a great promise. It actually has an impact. Like, the fruit or the harvest is that, like, people are affected by you. Like, we don't make decisions and live life in complete isolation. It is all within relation to one another. And, you know, things will be different. People will be different because of the way you choose to love. And that God is like, this is how I've decided to fill you up. This is what works. This is how the program works. As you give love, you know, it's more blessed to give than receive. In Vincent Milton's book, Saved for Good Works chapter on the Gospel Primer, chapter called Saved for Good Works, he says, being naturally lazy, I do not normally thrill at the prospect of work, but the more I embrace the saving work of God on my behalf, the more I find myself embracing the works for which God has saved me. And as I'm working hard at doing these works for the good of others, I experience the truth of Jesus' words. It is more blessed to give than receive. I also find myself saying with Christ, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. Indeed, gospel-motivated works do for the soul what food does for the body. They bring refreshment, enjoyment, blessing, strengthening to the doer of the deeds, even more so than the receiver. Yeah, it's like, I just did something I didn't feel like doing. I trusted God, and then he used it. There was an impact, and I feel full because of that. In the David Brooks New York Times article, The Moral Peril of Meritocracy, he says, perhaps most of the people who've emerged from a setback stay in their same jobs with their same lives, but they are different. It's not about self anymore. It's about relation. It's about the giving yourself away. Their joy is in seeing others shine. In their book, Practical Wisdom, by Barry Schwartz and Kenneth Sharp, they tell a story of a hospital janitor named Luke. In Luke's hospital, there was a young man who'd gotten into a fight and was now in a permanent coma, and the young man's father sat with him every day in silent vigil, and every day Luke cleaned the room. But one day, the father was out for a smoke when Luke cleaned it. Later that afternoon, the father found Luke and snapped at him for not cleaning the room. And the first mountain response is to see your job as cleaning rooms. Luke could have snapped back, I did clean the room. You were out smoking, right? The justification there, like, I did what I'm supposed to do. The second mountain response is to see your job as serving patients and their families. And in that case, you'd go back into the room and clean it again so that the father could have the comfort of seeing you do it. And that's what Luke did. If the first mountain is about building up the ego and defining the self, the second mountain is about shedding the ego and dissolving the self. If the first mountain is about acquisition, the second mountain is about contribution. On the first mountain, we shoot for happiness, but on the second mountain, we are rewarded with joy. What's the difference? Happiness involves a victory of the self. It happens when we move towards our goals. You get a promotion, you have a delicious meal. Joy involves the transcendence of self. When you're on the second mountain, you realize we aim too low. We compete to get near a little sun lamp. But if we live differently, continue to love others, we could feel the glow of real sunshine. On the second mountain, you see that happiness is good, but joy is better. Okay, that's a whole lot of, in theory, serve, get filled up, it's awesome, even though it's hard. But what does it practically look like to serve during the challenging years, right? If we left it right here, maybe we could all walk out of the room like, yeah, I love others, it's cool, we're good. But of course, again, every time it comes to parenting stuff, you always have to qualify because there's a million variables. So I'm going to qualify again. What does it look like to serve? Oh my God, this is a sampling. Like, how could you ever exhaustively lay out what it means to serve during the challenging years? This is a sampling of things that I thought about or things people talk about that I'm like, yeah, these are cool ways to serve during this time. And hopefully there's something on one of these, in one of these areas that makes you feel like inadequate, like I don't do that, yep, I'm not there. And it's like, yeah, we should be in that place where we're like, I can't do this, I need God. If I'm going to be able to love in this way, we should feel a little like, yep, that's not me, I'm not there yet. And that is what is going to drive me into a closer connection with him. So hopefully that's good. Serving your kids during this time, right? We're not into neglect, so we definitely meet base needs. I'm kind of talking about like that next step, right? The post-base needs. Your base needs are met. Now it's like doing what's really right and good for you is going to be at the cost of something I like, you know, for maybe some personal peace for me. The area of discipline, this is really complicated. It's hard to do well. It's hard to know how to do it in the moment. It's like, it's a great form of love for your children, but it's also multifaceted. And I feel like I had to read a lot of books on this to kind of get a basis. It's really hard sometimes to discipline your kids in front of other moms because you just like, it's so humbling, you know, you're like, am I doing it right? What do they think? And all this stuff. And it's like, if we're really going to serve our kids, we're going to kind of grasp our mind around how to teach them effectively and how to help them understand choices and consequences and the like. Okay, changing your agenda or your plans. Also changing their agenda and their plans. So sometimes it's like, this is where I was headed and what I'm going to do, but I see that this is what you need right now in this moment, and I'm going to concede. But sometimes they're like, I see your agenda, Mom, and this is my agenda, and it's the opposite. And you're like, yep, and you're going to have to learn flexibility this time, baby. It's your turn. And, you know, when is it that they need to learn flexibility, and when is it that we need to learn flexibility? Again, so complicated. Like, that's why it's like we need God to be like, hey, in this moment, it's this. In this moment, it's this. Like, I'm really calling on you here to lay this down for them. You're like, okay, okay, sacrifice personal peace. You know, I was talking to a good friend, and she's like, I realize I give my kid a screen because I love my personal peace. And it's like, at the cost of what is that doing to them? I'm not really considering that I'm just, this is the fastest way to get what I really want, you know? And it's like, oh, that's hard to say out loud. Putting away our phone. I put that up there just so we could all be like, yep, we're inadequate. We need God if we're going to, you know, prioritize our kids over our device. Proactive versus reactive with our kids. I'm just not naturally reflective. And so then I get to these, like, reactions. But I realize when I have a game plan of, like, here's what my kids need. Here's the things that we're working on with our kids, then it's like when I see it happen, I have a game plan and I'm ready to like use it as a teaching moment rather than like my anger for your chaos entering my world. You know, it's like I can really love my kids in a different way based on how much thought I put into them versus just getting through the day on repeat. Repentance and forgiveness, you know, like we can really serve our kids by being really humble and admitting the ways that we hurt them. You know, I'm like, girls, I'm really sorry that I asked you to cuss at the old man at Costco. That was a bad choice on mommy's part. It's like, you have to forgive me. But there's a lot of times where I'm like, I'm sorry, honey, I was not listening to you. And I'm sorry, like, this is on me. Or forgiveness, this is really hard when your oldest kid wakes up your baby from their nap, and that was your time to do anything that's not crazy. And I was like, I can forgive you. I'm going to say it out loud, and I'm going to try, you know, it's like, I need to release you because I am so angry. That really took away from what I had planned. Teaching your kids to serve. This was really interesting for me. I had my daughter on her birthday was not a nice person at the end of the day. And I was like, who are you? You are unrecognizable. And I thought to myself, man, 360-some days out of the year, we're like, it's about loving others, and that's how you get filled up, and all this stuff. And then on your birthday, we're going to make it all about you, and then be surprised when you're unhappy. And I was like, okay, this is not, I don't need to just go with, like, how everyone does birthdays. Like, no, this is, no, my kid, how are birthdays about serving your friends? This is an opportunity to serve your friends. And we spent the next year like, okay, we're going to do allergy-friendly food, and then everyone else is going to get their face painted first, and then you're going to help put tattoos on, and then when it comes to the photo shoot, like, everyone else gets a turn, and you go last, and, like, then you make sure everyone gets their butterfly wings. Like, it was, like, this day of, like, teaching her how to serve and what that looks like, and we had a great birthday, and I was like, thanks God for that one. That was cool, teaching, finding ways to teach our kids how to serve. Serving our spouse. During this time, it is crazy what young kids will do to your marriage. You know, you're like, it's a whole new relationship, and how do we keep love at the center and not transition into a business, you know, where we barter and make transactions. You do this, I got this, you do that, and then you, and lead parallel lives, accomplishing all the tasks, you know. It's like, what does it look like to have love remain in the center, where it's like, I'm going to do things not just because that's going to give me the time I'm begging for. I'm going to do things because I look at you and I see what you need, and this is going to serve you. I remember when God was like, Stephanie, you need to give up a day of, like, you don't get to sleep in this, during this stage of life. Like, this is not, He doesn't do mornings, okay? You need to love him in this way, and you need to give up this idea. I'm like, everyone else switches with their spouse, and everyone else trades, and it's not wrong. And God's like, I'm asking you to love him in this way. Like, let him have the sleep-in day, the one a week or whatever that I just really wanted to trade every other. And I just, it was cool. It's like, I felt like, okay, this is what God's calling on me to do, and I can do it. And it's like, I'm entering love into the relationship, and it's not with expectation, a return, or, like, you know, like, manipulative. It's like, I'm just trying to bring in some love, because that's what our relationship is about. And it's weird, because what it does is it, like, motivates the other person to do stuff like that. And it's not this for that, but it's weird, because it builds up itself in love, which is cool. Thinking through their needs, you know? A lot of times during this stage, you're, like, having babies and all this stuff, and they're working really hard and lots of hours. And we're, like, thinking about how needy we are and not necessarily what they need. Forgiving and overlooking offense. Some of the stuff going on in our hearts during this time might not even be talked about with our spouse, where it's like, I'm just not going to make that. That's not what I'm going to release that. I'm going to benefit of the doubt. I'm going to not make this the issue, because we have a lot of other stuff, and God forgave me and I get to forgive you. I put sex up there because, well, sometimes during this stage it's just hard and you're not feeling it, and that's a way to serve. Empowering versus managing. Oh, man. We were at a camping retreat this past weekend, and one of the moms comes up, and she's like, there are entirely way too many dads on a dock with way too many kids, with way too many fishing poles and hooks, and way too many backs turned to those children on the dock with the hooks. And I am so, and I was like, I'm not even going to go down there and check on my two-year-old. I am, like, you gotta let them. That dads parent differently, you know. It's like, and the kids survived and they were all fine. But oh my goodness, dads parent differently, and micromanaging that versus empowering that is really a cool way to love them. And it's like, I have to zip it right now. Prioritizing the relationship, date night is sacred. Finding ways. I feel like date night was complicated after our first two kids, and after our third kid, we found a way to get childcare once a week. And it was the easiest time post-kid for our marriage out of all of it. And it was like, oh my God, just 2 hours looking across the table from each other changes everything. Like, and how we do life together. And then helping them be able to serve. It's like, I'm staying home tonight because my husband needs to be able to do this. And that's how he's going to get filled up. And then serving outside of our family, right? Some Christian circles you'll hear like, my family is my ministry, you know? And to that, I'm like, that's just not what Jesus says. Like, it's bigger than that. If we love only those who love you, what reward is there for that? Even corrupt tax collectors do that much. Matthew 5:46. Yeah, it's like we can love within the context of our families, but God has bigger plans for us serving outside of our family. Oftentimes, it's the stuff, the ways that God's calling me to love outside my family that fills me up to be able to give love to my family. Like, this is part of the filling he wants to give, the renewal to be able to give out. We got to initiate in our friendships. I'm a terrible initiator. And it's like, if you're going to make it through this time with friendships, you're going to be an initiator. And then it's like, okay, we're initiating with friends, but we're also making new friends. This is my favorite thing. Like, when you're in college, it's easy to make friends. When you're in your career, you have, like, work, but, like, your circle of friends is really small. When you have kids, it's like you're at the park, and it's like, you have a kid, I have a kid. Oh, my God, that's crazy. We should be friends. And it's so fun. This is, like, such a great stage. It's like, just because you're in the crazy, I'm in the crazy. Let's be friends. And it's so fun to make friends during this stage. I'm just, like, every year I'm like, I want more mom friends. This is so cool and filling, and maybe God has some way for me to give out love, you know, just maybe. So I'm always looking for opportunities to make new friends because I know that that's how God fills me up. I feel like, wow, like we didn't just go to the park for nothing. We went to the park because God had plans, and it was bigger than that, and I feel full because of that. Showing up, oh my God, this is the best advice I ever got before having kids, is like, after kids, dude, showing up, you won. Like, you didn't cancel, you didn't give up, you didn't choose something else instead. You are winning. It's like, that is sometimes just the main battle that we're fighting. Like, I am gonna go. Okay, I said I would hang out with this friend. I said I would go to this playgroup. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna commit to my commitments. Praying, teaching, studying the Bible with someone. So cool. I just remember like, okay, I'm up all night. What am I going to do? Well, I'm going to pray. At least I'm accomplishing something a little bit more than just keeping a baby alive, which is also a really great accomplishment. So not to negate that. Host dinners, happy hours, Bible studies, play groups, get your neighborhood together, get kids together, have people over, do life together. Like, this is such a great time. It's really challenging. It's not going to be comfortable. You know, I'm like always scrubbing dishes before people are at my house. Like, why do I do this to myself? You know, and it's like, because I do. I'm committed to this, and I know this is how I get full. I don't feel it in the moment. Say yes to the steps of faith that God puts in front of you. That was the best advice I got from a friend, too, who was like, you know what? Maybe it's not about searching out crazy ways to trust God, but maybe when God presents something in front of you, you don't say no, you know, and you're like, okay, I guess I will teach a parenting meeting. Like, vacations, retreats, camping with other families. Everyone does family life differently. This is like, ooh, real crazy. And most people, when you're like, oh, I just went on vacation with like six other families, and they're like, ew, you took off work to go be with how many kids were in that house? I'm like, and it was great. Yeah, there were like 15, and it was awesome. And my kids, like, these are their long-term memories. And, oh, my God, did you know that this mom does it this way? Like, I have been struggling with doing it that way, and that's dumb. Like, this is, she has it right. And you pick up on, like, cool things just by spending that much time with other people doing this together, which is really cool. So some conclusions to draw from all of this. Are we persuaded on how we actually get filled up? Do we have regular time with a close friend who knows our tendencies? You know, the reality of it is we're not always going to be like, I always choose selflessness. You know, it's like, I don't always. So, like, am I headed in this direction? Am I headed in this direction? Am I taking too many steps in the direction I don't really want to go? And do I have a friend who's going to tell me when I'm doing that? Do we have closeness? Because we're not going to see it. And then what are our non-negotiables? In spite of how your day is going, in spite of how you feel, in spite of what your kids are saying or doing, what are your commitments? I like in David Brooks's article, The Moral Peril of Meritocracy, he says this. On the first mountain, personal freedom is celebrated, keeping your options open, absence of restraint. But the perfectly free life is the unattached, unremembered life. Freedom is not an ocean you want to swim in. It's a river. You want to cross it so that you can plant yourself on the other side. So the person on the second mountain is making commitments. People who have made a commitment to a town, a person, an institution, or a cause, they've cast their lot, they've burned their bridges behind them. They've made a promise without expecting a return. They are all in. I can now usually recognize first and second mountain people. The former have an ultimate allegiance to self. The latter have an ultimate allegiance to some commitment. Yeah, what are our commitments? Are we committed to servant love? Psalm 119:71 says, "My suffering was good for me, for it taught me to pay attention to your decrees." I just feel like, who am I to be up here? Like, I wasn't that spiritually minded before I had kids. You know, like, why does having kids help me, like, love God more? It's just, that's crazy to me that I'd be like, yeah, you're kind of, you know, you're mediocre. But then, man, you had kids and crazy entered. And then, like, some of the stuff you really yearned for to have with God, the discipline and that you wanted to spend time with him more, and the trust to give him more of yourself. Man, God was like, I have a time period, and we'll do this in your life. I just think, like, looking forward, I was like, I could see people, you know, not doing well after having kids. But now I'm looking back going, man, God, you changed me in a way that I was not expecting. So it's cool. It's like we can enter this stage and come out better because of it, which is crazy.